A challenge has been issued. Rufus Hastings has challenged Bartholomew Velasquez for the seniority and leadership of the New York Pack. There was a muttering in the crowd. Leela raised her voice. This is an issue of temporary leadership in the absence of Luke Garraway. No discussion of replacing Luke as leader will be had at this time. She clasped her hands behind her back. Please step forward, Bartholomew and Rufus. Bat stepped forward into the circle, and a moment later Rufus followed. Both were dressed unseasonably in jeans, t-shirt, and boots, their arms bare despite the chill air. The rules of the challenge are these, said Leela. Wolf must fight Wolf without weapons save the weapons of tooth and claw. Because it is a challenge for leadership, the fight will be a fight to the death, not to the blood. Whoever lives will be leader, and all other wolves will swear loyalty to him tonight. Do you understand? Bat nodded. He looked tense, his jaw set. Rufus was grinning all over, his arms swinging at his sides. He waved away Leela's words.
We all know how it works, kid.
Her lips compressed into a thin line. Then you may begin, she said, though as she moved back into the circle with the others, she muttered, Good luck, Bat, under her breath, just loudly enough for everyone to hear her. Rufus didn't seem bothered. He was still grinning, and the moment Leela stepped back into the circle with the pack, he lunged. Bat sidestepped him. Rufus was big and heavy. Bat was lighter and a shade faster. He spun sideways, just missing Rufus's claws, and came back with an uppercut that snapped Rufus's head back. He pressed his advantage quickly, raining down blows that sent the other wolf stumbling back. Rufus's feet dragged along the ground as a low growl began in the depths of his throat. His hands hung at his sides, his fingers clenched in. Bat swung again, landing a punch to Rufus's shoulder. Just as Rufus turned and slashed out with his left hand, his claws were fully extended, massive and gleaming in the moonlight. It was clear he had sharpened them somehow. Each one was like a razor, and they raked across Bat's chest, slicing open his shirt and his skin with it. Scarlet bloomed across Bat's ribcage. First blood! Leela called, and the wolves began to stamp slowly, each raising their left foot and bringing it down in a regular beat so that the ground seemed to echo like a drum. Rufus grinned again and advanced on Bat. Bat swung and hit him, landing another punch to the jaw that brought blood to Rufus's mouth. Rufus turned his head to the side and spit red onto the grass, and kept coming. Bat backed up, his claws were out now, his eyes gone flat and yellow. He growled and flung out a kick. Rufus grabbed his leg and twisted, sending Bat to the ground. He flung himself after Bat, but the other werewolf had already rolled away, and Rufus landed on the ground in a crouch. Bat staggered to his feet, but it was clear that he was losing blood. Blood had rolled down his chest and was soaking the waistband of his jeans, and his hands were wet with it. He slashed out with his claws. Rufus turned, taking the blow on his shoulder, 4 shallow cuts. With a snarl, he seized Bat's wrist and twisted. The sound of snapping bone was loud, and Bat gasped and pulled back. Rufus lunged. The weight of him bore Bat to the ground, slamming Bat's head hard against a tree root. Bat went limp. The other wolves were still pounding the earth with their feet. Some of them were openly weeping, but none moved forward as Rufus sat up on Bat, one hand pressing him flat to the grass, the other raised, the razors of his fingers gleaming. He moved in for the killing blow. Stop! Maya's voice rang out through the park. The other wolves looked up in shock. Rufus grinned. Hey, little girl, he said. Maya didn't move. She was in the middle of the circle. Somehow, she had pushed past the line of wolves without them noticing. She wore cords and a denim jacket, her hair pulled tightly back. Her expression was severe, almost blank. I want to issue a challenge, she said. Maya, Leela said, you know the law. When you fight with a wolf of the pack, you must fight him alone and afar. Lest others take part in the quarrel and the pack be diminished by war, you cannot interrupt the battle. Rufus is about to deliver the death blow, Maya said unemotionally. Do you really feel like I need to wait that 5 minutes before I issue my challenge? I will if Rufus is too scared to fight me with Bat still breathing. Rufus leaped off Bat's limp body with a roar and advanced on Maya. Leela's voice rose in panic. Maya, get out of there! Once there's first blood, we can't stop the fight! Rufus lunged at Maya. His claws tore the edge of her jacket. Maya dropped to her knees and rolled, then came up onto her knees, her claws extended. Her heart was slamming against her ribcage, sending wave after wave of icy hot blood through her veins. She could feel the sting of the cut on her shoulder. First blood. The werewolves began to stamp the earth again, though this time they weren't silent. There was muttering and gasping in the ranks. Maya did her best to block it out, ignore it. She saw Rufus step toward her. He was a shadow, outlined by moonlight. And in that moment she saw not just him, but also Sebastian, looming over her on the beach, a cold prince carved out of ice and blood. Your boyfriend's dead. Her fist clenched against the ground as Rufus threw himself at her, razor claws extended. She rose and flung her handful of dirt and grass into his face. He staggered back, choking and blinded. Maya stepped forward and slammed her boot down on his foot. She felt the small bone shatter, heard him scream. In that moment, when he was distracted, she jammed her claws into his eyes. A scream ripped from his throat, quickly cut off. He slumped backwards, collapsing onto the grass with a loud crash that made her think of a tree falling. She looked down at her hand. It was covered in blood and smears of liquid, brain matter and vitreous humor. She dropped to her knees and threw up in the grass. Her claws slid back in and she wiped her hands on the ground, over and over as her stomach spasmed. She felt a hand on her back and looked up to see Leela leaning over her. Maya, she said softly, but her voice was drowned out by the pack chanting the name of their new leader. Maya, Maya, Maya! Leela's eyes were dark and concerned. Maya rose to her feet, wiping her mouth on the sleeve of her jacket, and hurried across the grass to Bat. She bent down beside him and touched her hand to his cheek. Bat? She said. With an effort, he opened his eyes. There was blood on his mouth, but he was breathing steadily. Maya guessed he was already healing from Rufus's blows. I didn't know you fought dirty, he said with a half-smile. Maya thought of Sebastian and his glittering grin and the bodies on the beach. She thought of what Lily had told her. She thought of the shadow hunters behind their wards and of the fragility of the Accords and Council. It's going to be a dirty war, she thought, but that wasn't what she said out loud. I didn't know your name was Bartholomew. She picked up his hand, held it in her own bloody one. All around them the pack was still chanting, Maya, Maya, Maya. He closed his eyes. Everyone's got their secrets. It almost doesn't seem to make a difference, said Jace, curled into the window seat in his and Alec's attic room. It all feels like prison. Do you think that's a side effect of the fact that armed guards are standing all around the house? Simon suggested. I mean, just a thought. Jace shot him an irritable look. What is it about mundanes and their overwhelming compulsion to state the obvious? He asked. He leaned forward, staring through the panes of the window. Simon might have been exaggerating slightly, but only slightly. The dark figures standing at cardinal points surrounding the Inquisitor's house might have been invisible to the untrained eye, but not to Jace's. I'm not a mundane, Simon said, an edge to his voice. And what is it about shadow hunters and their overwhelming compulsion to get themselves and everyone they care about killed? Stop arguing! Alec had been leaning against the wall, in classical thinking pose, with his chin propped on his hand. The guards are there to protect us, not keep us in. Have some perspective. Alec, you've known me for several years, said Jace. When have I ever had perspective? Alec glowered at him. Are you still mad because I broke your phone? Jace said. Because you broke my wrist, so I'd say we're even. It was sprained, Alec said. Not broken, sprained. Now who's arguing? Said Simon. Don't talk. Alec gestured at him with an expression of vague disgust. Every time I look at you, I keep remembering coming in here and seeing you draped all over my sister. Jace sat up. I didn't hear about this. Oh, come on, said Simon. Simon, you're blushing, observed Jace. And you're a vampire and almost never blush, so this better be really juicy and weird. Were bicycles involved in some kinky way, vacuum cleaners, umbrellas? Big umbrellas or the little kind you get with drinks? Alec asked. Does it matter? Jace began, and then broke off as Clary came into the room with Isabel, holding a small girl by the hand. After a moment of shocked silence, Jace recognized her. Emma, the girl whom Clary had run off to comfort during the council meeting. the one who'd looked at him with barely concealed hero worship. Not that he minded hero worship, but it was a bit odd to have a child dropped suddenly in the middle of what had admittedly begun to be a somewhat awkward conversation. "Clary," he said, "did you kidnap Emma Carstairs?" Clary gave him an exasperated look. "No, she got here on her own." "I came in through one of the windows," Emma supplied helpfully, "like in Peter Pan." Alex started to protest. Clary held her free hand up to stop him. Her other hand was now on Emma's shoulder. "Everyone just be quiet for a second, okay?" Clary said. "She's not supposed to be here, yeah, but she came for a reason. She has information." "That's right," Emma said in her small, determined voice. She was actually only about a head shorter than Clary, but then Clary was tiny. Emma would probably be tall one day. Jace tried to remember her father, John Carstairs. He was sure he'd seen him at council meetings, and thought he recalled a tall, fair-haired man. Or had his hair been dark? The Blackthorns he remembered, of course, but the Carstairs had faded out of his memory. Clary returned his sharp look with one that said, "Be nice." Jace closed his mouth. He'd never given much thought to whether he liked children or not, though he'd always liked playing with Max. Max had been surprisingly adept at strategy for such a little boy, and Jace had always liked setting him puzzles. The fact that Max had worshipped the ground he walked on hadn't hurt either. Jace thought of the wooden soldier he'd given to Max and closed his eyes in sudden pain. When he opened them again, Emma was looking at him. Not in the way she'd looked at him when he found her with Clary and the guard, the sort of startled, half-impressed, half-frightened, "You're Jace Lightwood" look, but with a little bit of worry. In fact, her whole posture was a mix of confidence that he was fairly sure she was faking, and clear fright. Her parents were dead, he thought, had died days ago. And he remembered a time 7 years before, when he'd faced the Lightwoods himself, with the knowledge in his heart that his father had just died, and the bitter tang of the word orphan in his ears. "Emma," he said as gently as he could, "how did you get into the window?"
"I climbed over the rooftops," she said, pointing out the window. "It wasn't that hard. Dormer windows are almost always bedrooms, so I climbed down to the first one, and it was Clary's." She shrugged, as if what she'd done hadn't been either risky or impressive. "It was mine, actually," said Isabel, who was looking at Emma as if she were a fascinating specimen. Isabel sat down on the trunk at the foot of Alex's bed, stretching out her long legs. "Clary lives over at Luke's." Emma looked confused. "I don't know where that is, and everyone was talking about all of you being here, that's why I came." Alec looked down at Emma with the half-fond, half-worried look of a much older brother. "Don't be afraid," he began. "I'm not afraid," she snapped. "I came here because you need help." Jace felt his mouth quirk up involuntarily at the corner. "What kind of help?" he asked. "I recognized that man today," she said. "The one who threatened the council? He came with Sebastian to attack the Institute." She swallowed. "That place he said we would all burn in? Edom..."
"It's another word for hell," said Alec. "Not a real place. You don't have to be worried."
"She's not worried, Alec," Clary said. "Just listen."
"It is a place," said Emma. "When they attacked the Institute, I heard them. I heard one of them say that they could take Mark to Edom and sacrifice him there. And when we escaped through the portal, I heard her calling after us that we'd burn in Edom, that there was no real escape."
Her voice shook.
"The way they talked about Edom, I know it was a real place, or a real place to them."
"Edom," said Clary, remembering. "Valentine called Lilith something like that. He called her My Lady of Edom." Alec's eyes met Jace's. Alec nodded and slipped out of the room. Jace felt his shoulders relax minutely. In among the clamor of everything, it was good to have a Parabatai who knew what you were thinking without you having to say it.
"Have you told anyone else about this?"
Emma hesitated and then shook her head.
"Why not?"
said Simon, who had been quiet until that moment. Emma looked at him, blinking. She was only 12, Jace thought, and had probably barely encountered downworlders up close before.
"Why not tell the Clave?"
"Because I don't trust the Clave," said Emma in a small voice. "But I trust you."
Clary swallowed visibly.
"Emma, when we got here, the Clave questioned all of us, especially Jules, and they used the mortal sword to make sure we weren't lying." It hurts, but they didn't care. They used it on Ty and Livy. They used it on Drew.
Emma sounded outraged.
They would probably have used it on Tavi if he could talk, and it hurts. The mortal sword hurts.
I know, Clary said quietly.
We've been staying with the Penhallows, Emma said, because of Aline and Helen, and because the Clave wants to keep an eye on us, too, because of what we saw. I was downstairs when they came back from the funeral and I heard them talking, so I hid. A whole group of them, not just Patrick and Gia, but a lot of other Institute heads, too. They were talking about what they should do, what the Clave should do, whether they should turn over Jason Clary to Sebastian as if it were their choice, their decision. But I thought it should be your decision. Some of them said it didn't matter whether you wanted to go or not.
Simon was on his feet. But Jason Clary offered to go, practically begged to go.
We would have told them the truth. Emma pushed her tangled hair out of her face. Her eyes were enormous, brown, shot through with bits of gold and amber. They didn't have to use the mortal sword on us. We would have told the council the truth, but they used it anyway. They used it on Jules until his hands were burned from it.
Her voice shook.
So I thought you should know what they were saying. They don't want you to know it's not your choice because they know Clary can make portals. They know she can get out of here, and if she escapes, they think they'll have no way to bargain with Sebastian.
The door opened, and Alec came back into the room, carrying a book bound in brown leather. He was holding it in such a way as to obscure the title, but his eyes met Jace's, and he gave a slight nod, and then a glance towards Emma. Jace's heartbeat sped up. Alec had found something. Something he didn't like, judging from his grim expression. But something nonetheless.
Did the Clave members you overheard give any sense when they were going to decide what to do?
Jace asked Emma, partly to distract her, as Alec sat down on the bed, sliding the book behind him. Emma shook her head.
They were still arguing when I left. I crawled out the top floor window. Jules told me not to because I'd get killed, but I knew I wouldn't. I'm a good climber, she added with a tinge of pride. And he worries too much.
It's good to have people worry about you, said Alec. It means they care. It's how you know they're good friends.
Emma's gaze went from Alec to Jace, curious.
Do you worry about him?
She asked Alec, surprising a laugh out of him.
All the time, he said. Jace could get himself killed putting his pants on in the morning. Being his parabatai is a full-time job.
I wish I had a parabatai, Emma said. It's like someone who's your family, but because they want to be, not because they have to be.
She flushed, suddenly self-conscious.
Anyway, I don't think anyone should be punished for saving people.
Is that why you trust us? Clary asked, touched. You think we save people? Emma toed the carpet with her boots, then she looked up.
I knew about you, she said to Jace, blushing. I mean, everyone knows about you.
That you were Valentine's son, but then you weren't, you were Jonathan Herondale?
And I don't think that meant anything to most people, most of them called you Jace Lightwood. But it made a difference to my dad. I heard him say to my mom that he thought the Herondales were all gone, that the family was dead, but you were the last of them, and he voted in the council meeting for the Clave to keep looking for you, because he said, the Carstairs owe the Herondales.
Why? Alec said. What do they owe them for?
I don't know, Emma said, but I came because my dad would have wanted me to, even if it was dangerous.
Jace huffed a soft laugh. Something tells me you don't care if things are dangerous. He crouched down, putting his eyes on the level with Emma's. Is there anything you can tell us, anything else they said?
She shook her head. They don't know where Sebastian is. They don't know about the Edom thing. I mentioned it when I was holding the mortal sword. But I think they just thought it was another word for hell. They never asked me if I thought it was a real place, so I didn't say.
Thanks for telling us. It's a help, a huge help. You should go, he added as gently as he could, before they notice you're gone. But from now on, the Herondales owe the Carstairs, okay? Remember that.
Jace stood up as Emma turned to Clary, who nodded and led her over to the window where Jace had been sitting earlier.
Clary bent down and hugged the younger girl before reaching over to unlatch a window. Emma clambered out with the agility of a monkey. She swung herself up until only her dangling boots were visible, and a moment later those were gone too.
Jace heard a light scraping overhead as she darted across the roof tiles, and then silence.
I like her, Isabel said finally. She kind of reminds me of Jace when he was little and stubborn and acted like he was immortal.
Two of those things still apply, said Clary, swinging the window shut. She sat down on the window seat.
I guess the big question is, do we tell Gia or anyone else on the council what Emma told us?
That depends, said Jace.
Gia has to bow to what the whole Clave wants. She said so herself. If they decide that what they want is to toss us into a cage until Sebastian comes for us, well, that pretty much squanders any upper hand this information might give us.
So it depends on if the information's actually useful or not, said Simon.
Right, said Jace.
Alec, what did you find out?
Alec pulled the book out from behind him. It was an Encyclopedia Demonica, the sort of book every Shadowhunter library would have. I thought Edom might be a name for one of the demon realms.
Well, everyone's been theorizing that Sebastian might be in a different dimension since he's untrackable, said Isabel.
But the demon dimensions, there are millions of them, and people can't just go there.
Some are better known than others, said Alec. The Bible and the Enochian texts mention quite a few, disguised and subsumed, of course, into the stories and myths.
Edom is mentioned as a wasteland, he read out loud, his voice measured. And the streams of Edom shall be turned into pitch, and her soil into sulfur. Her land shall become burning pitch. Night and day it shall not be quenched. Its smoke shall go up forever. From generation to generation it shall lie waste. None shall pass through it forever and ever. He sighed.
And of course there's the legends about Lilith and Edom, that she was banished there, that she rules the place with the demon Asmodeus.
That's probably why the Indarkand were talking about sacrificing Mark Blackthorn to her in Edom.
Lilith protects Sebastian, said Clary. If he was going to go to a demon realm, he'd go to hers.
None shall pass through it forever and ever doesn't sound very encouraging, said Jace. Besides, there's no way to get to the demon realms. Traveling from place to place in this world is one thing.
Well, there is a way, I think, said Alec. A pathway that the Nephilim can't close because it lies outside the jurisdiction of our laws. It's old, older than Shadowhunters, old, wild magic. He sighed. It's in the Seelie Court, and it's guarded by the Fair Folk. No human has set foot on that pathway in more than 100 years.
13. Paved with good intentions. Jace was prowling the room like a cat. The others watched him, Simon with one eyebrow cocked.
There's no other way to get there, Jace asked. We can't try to portal.
We're not demons.
We can portal only within a dimension, said Alec.
I know that, but if Clary experimented with the portal runes...
I won't do it, Clary interrupted, putting her hand protectively over the pocket where her steely rested. I won't put you all in danger. I portaled myself and Luke to Idris and nearly got us killed. I'm not risking it.
Jace was still prowling. It was what he did when he was thinking.
Clary knew that, but looked at him worriedly all the same. He was closing and unclosing his hands and murmuring under his breath. Finally, he stopped.
Clary, he said, you can make a portal to the Seelie Court, right?
Yes, she said.
That I can do. I've been there, I remember it, but
would we be safe? We haven't been invited, and the Fair Folk don't like incursions into their territory.
There's no we, Jace said. None of you are coming. I'm going to do this alone.
Alec sprang to his feet.
I knew it. I bloody knew it, and absolutely not. Not a chance.
Jace cocked an eyebrow at him. He was outwardly calm, but Clary could see his tension in the set of his shoulders and the way he rocked forward slightly on the balls of his feet.
Since when do you say bloody?
Since the situation bloody warrants it, Alec crossed his arms over his chest. And I thought we were going to discuss telling the Clave.
We can't do that, Jace said. Not if we're going to get to the demon's realms through the Seelie Court. It's not like half the Clave can just pour into the court. That would seem like an act of war against the Fair Folk.
Whereas if it's just 5 of us, we can sweet-talk them into letting us through.
Isabel raised an eyebrow.
We've parleyed with the Queen before, Jace said.
You went to the Queen when Sebastian had me.
and she tricked us into taking walkie-talkie rings she could listen in on, Simon said. I wouldn't trust her further than I could throw a medium-sized elephant.
I didn't say anything about trusting her. She'll do whatever's in her interest at the moment. We just have to make it her interest to let us have access to the road to Edom.
We're still shadow hunters, said Alec. Still representatives of the Clave. Whatever we do in Faerie, they'll answer for it.
So we'll use tact and cleverness, said Jace.
Look, I'd love to make the Clave deal with the Queen and her court for us, but we don't have the time.
They, Luke and Jocelyn and Magnus and Raphael, don't have the time.
Sebastian's gearing up, he's speeding up his plans, his bloodlust.
You don't know what he's like when he gets like this, but I do, I do.
He caught his breath. There was a thin sheen of sweat across his cheekbones.
Which is why I want to do this alone. Brother Zacharias said it to me. I am the heavenly fire. It's not like we can get another Glorious. We can't exactly summon another angel. We played that card.
Fine, Clary said. But even if you're the only source of heavenly fire, that doesn't mean you need to do this alone.
She's right, Alec said. We know that heavenly fire can hurt Sebastian, but we don't know it's the only thing that can hurt him.
And it definitely doesn't mean you're the only one who can kill however many in Darkened Sebastian has standing around him, Clary pointed out. Or that you can get yourself through the Seelie Court safely on your own, or, after that, through some forsaken demon realm where you have to find Sebastian.
We can't track him because we're not in the same dimension, Jace said. He held up his wrist where Sebastian's silver bracelet glittered.
Once I'm in his world, I can track him. I've done it before.
We can track him, Clary said.
Jace, there's more to this than just finding him. This is huge, bigger than anything we've done. This isn't just about killing Sebastian. This is about the prisoners. It's a rescue mission. It's their lives on the line as well as ours. Her voice cracked.
Jace had paused his prowling. He looked from one of his friends to the other, almost pleading. I don't want anything to happen to you.
Yeah, well, none of us want anything to happen to us either, said Simon. But think ahead, what happens if you go and we stay? Sebastian wants Clary, wants her more than he wants you, and he can find her here in Alicante. Nothing's stopping him from coming again except a promise that he'll wait 2 days.
And what are his promises worth?
He could come for any of us at any time. He proved that with the Downworld representatives. We're sitting ducks here, better to go where he isn't expecting or looking for us.
I will not hang back here in Alicante while Magnus is in danger, said Alec in a surprisingly cold adult voice.
Go without me, and you disrespect our Parabatai oaths, you disrespect me as a shadow hunter, and you disrespect the fact that this is my battle too.
Jace looked shocked. Alec, I would never disrespect our oaths. You're one of the best shadow hunters I know.
Which is why we come with you, said Isabel. You need us. You need Alec and me to back you up the way we always have. You need Clary's rune powers and Simon's vampire strength. This isn't just your fight. If you respect us as shadow hunters and as your friends, all of us, then we go with you. It's that simple.
I know, Jace said softly. I know I need you. He looked over at Clary, and she heard Isabel's voice saying, You need Clary's rune powers, and remembered the first time she had ever seen him, Alec and Isabel on either side of him, and how she had thought he looked dangerous. It never occurred to her that she was like him, that she was dangerous too.
Thank you, he said, and cleared his throat.
Okay, everyone get into gear and pack bags. Pack for overland travel, water, what food you can grab, extra steelies, blankets.
And you, he said to Simon.
You might not need food, but if you have bottled blood, bring it. There might not be anything you can eat where we're going.
There's always the four of you, Simon said, but he smiled a little, and Clary knew it was because Jace had included him among their number without a moment's hesitation. Finally, Jace had accepted that where they went, Simon went too, whether he was a shadow hunter or not.
All right, Alec said. Everyone meet back here in 10 minutes. Clary, get ready to create a portal, and Jace?
Yes?
You'd better have a strategy for what we're going to do when we get to the Faerie Court, because we're going to need it.
The maelstrom inside the portal was almost a relief. Clary went last through the shining doorway, after the other four had stepped through, and she let the cold darkness take her like water pulling her down and under, stealing